with great talent for mindless destruction. Relum showed superior intelligence. Some whispered that he had once been human, twisted by the darkness into a monster. Of course, no one really believed such nonsense. "Master Agrippa," I said, "can nothing be done to better protect the unwarded areas? If we cannot shield our own citizens, why should the rest of England have faith in us?"
"Us?" Blackwood said.
He kept doing that, dividing me from the rest of the boys with a word or a look. Every time Magnus or the others addressed me as Howl, he cleared his throat or made an exasperated noise. I thought my getting along with his sister had softened him somewhat. Apparently, I was wrong. "I know you don't yet consider me one of you, my lord," I said, struggling to maintain a polite tone. "But I'm only trying to help."
"I agree with Howl," Wolf said. "It's an outrage, and I'm glad someone else is saying it. Clarence agrees with us, don't you?"
Lamb nodded, his pale hair falling into his eyes. "It's a shame when families are separated." Everyone stopped talking. Uncomfortable looks were passed around the table. I was confused until Wolf explained.
"Only sorcerers who favor the Church of England may remain inside warded London. My family follows an older religion, so my parents had to leave for the country."
He pushed his knife and fork aside. Evidently, his appetite had vanished.
"Once I'm commended, I'll have to live outside the ward as well."
What a hideous practice. "Surely it's important to protect everyone," I said to Agrippa. Agrippa nodded.
"We can discuss this further after you're commended."
Blackwood coughed. Really, I was worried about the failure in today's lesson enough as it was. My breaking point had been reached.
"Do you have a cold, my lord?" I said, rounding on him. "No, Miss Howe."
"Do you dislike the idea of a lady sorcerer?"
"As I told you yesterday, that would mean my going against the order."
That was another clear attempt to not answer the question. I didn't care if I was wearing the bloody gown he had purchased. "Are you against the order?" I asked. His eyes widened in surprise.
"I stand with the order entirely."
That answer was sincere. "I'm sorry. I'm just upset."
"It's all right. Compassion for the poor is admirable."
That's tone. I would have gladly given the topic up, but for that condescending tone. I rapped my fork against the side of my plate to calm and focus myself. "Admirable, but not practical."
"In this case, no. The ward protects Her Majesty, and of course, the high sorcerer families. If we fall, England falls."
He sounded almost as if he regretted it. But what could he do?
"The most exceptional individuals are also the most necessary."
"Have you ever considered that you were lucky to be born into circumstances that made you such an exceptional individual?" I breathed slowly to keep myself from yelling. "Rook, for instance, he might have done as well as you, if he'd been born to a wealthy family, sent to the best schools, educated by the best people. But he's the orphaned son of a brickmaker, and unclean. So whatever he might have been is unimportant."
"I don't think this is very good dinner conversation," Cellini said, sounding irritated.
I got the feeling it would be more comfortable for everyone if I gave up the topic. But we were in this argument now, Blackwood and I.
"Of course, Rook matters," Blackwood said, as if explaining to a child. "I don't believe it's fair that some receive everything and others nothing, merely by the luck of being born. But it is the reality."
So the reality is that the poor should be sacrificed to protect you? This is what the Earl of Sorrowfell truly believed.
You're twisting my words, Miss Howe.
He was right. I was twisting his words. But his manner infuriated me. He'd lived behind the ward all his life. How could he presume to know how other people suffered? Have you seen a village destroyed by familiars? Have you ever met children with their limbs torn off, their bodies covered with scars just like Rook's? Do you know what it's like, as part of your school charity, to travel to the site of a battle and nurse the wounded and dying? Have you ever been attacked with nothing to protect you? The first time I glimpsed a sorcerer in 11 years of war was when Master Agrippa came to my school, hunting for the prophesied one. 11 years! What were you all doing in that time? I stared right into Blackwood's eyes. What were you doing, my lord? Riding and playing country sports on your estate?
Agrippa cleared his throat. That will do, both of you, he said. In fact, I was preoccupied with my studies. I wanted to be useful. Isn't usefulness your chief interest? Blackwood's voice with silken coldness. I did not see much use in a girl's school.
Magnus set his glass down, eyes flashing.
We found our prophesied one at that girl's school, didn't we?
I had to put my hands in my lap. They were beginning to spark. It's good to know how little your responsibilities at home matter to you. It explains why Brimthorn has been open to violence for so long.
Sorrowfell protects your school, Miss Howell. You said yourself, in 11 years you had never seen an attack.
Some monsters wear human faces. You kept out the ancients, but you allowed a cruel, violent man who should never be put in charge of another living soul to run Brimthorn. Where was your protection then? The whole table stopped eating. Magnus's eyes widened. Blackwood grew still, but I could see the fury flickering inside him.
You said that if only Rook had been born into my position, we would be exactly alike, he snapped. Well, you're wrong. We are fundamentally different.
If you're so certain, I said, my voice rocky and low, that the poor are born inferior, then all the shame in the world on you for not protecting them. If people are born generation after generation into poverty and deprivation, it is your duty to look after them, not sacrifice their lives to save your own. I threw down my napkin and fled from the table. I raced up the stairs and into my bedroom, where I struggled to tear myself out of my dress. My fingers burned so badly that I had to stop to perform the calming exercises that Agrippa had taught me. I breathed in and out to the count of four, imagining a cool stream of water running down my hands. Slowly, the fiery pain left, but I still trembled with rage. There was a knock at the door.
"Who is it?" I asked.
"Lily, miss." She entered and surveyed my crumpled state with a sad eye. "They said you'd gone to bed. Let me help you." She moved to unlace me, when there was another knock.
"May I speak with you?"
A familiar voice asked. Lily opened the door. Agrippa stood upon the threshold. He cast a quick, miserable glance around his daughter's old room. How often, if ever, did he come inside?
"Are you all right?" he asked.
"I'm sorry."
Agrippa didn't deserve people screaming at his table. I kept my eyes on the floor.
"I can't believe I said those things."
"Don't apologize. When you're commended, you'll also be the founder of the Howell line. Part of your responsibility as a seal-bearer will be speaking up in order assemblies. Besides, I was pleased."
Surprised, I looked up,
He made as if to enter, but stopped.
What you witnessed tonight was sorcery's ugliest face. Many believe that common men and women are inferior. I hope, he said, lowering his voice, that you can do more for this country than help destroy the ancients. There are minds that need changing.
I can't imagine that's something Lord Blackwood will like.
Nonetheless, it's what I believe. Don't fret, and don't think too harshly of George. He dwells on his responsibilities to a punishing degree. I'm sure he'll brood on what you said for the next few days.
Agrippa glanced about the room once more. My stomach lurched at his obvious sadness. Do you wish me to change rooms? I can't stand how much pain my being here seems to cause you.
No. This is as it should be.
Agrippa closed his eyes.
I've gotten to avoiding this wing of the house. This room needed a new occupant, and I'm happy to find a lovely young lady living here again. Now, get to sleep.
With that, he was gone. Lily took my dress off, put it away, and unlaced my corset. I pulled the pins from my hair, cursing Blackwood under my breath. I got into my nightdress and stared at my reflection in the mirror, feeling bone-weary. I don't know how I can face them again. I think the gentlemen are more with you than not, Lily said. At least that's what Jimmy told me, the first footman. Says Mr. Magnus in particular is on your side. Apparently, he had some strong words for his lordship after you left.
That's good to know.
The thought of Magnus berating Blackwood was pleasing. I was sure he'd done an excellent job. You should rest now, miss. Gram used to say he looks better in the morning.
Thank you, Lily.
She stopped at the door. Miss, Jimmy told us downstairs what you said to Lord Blackwood. Her eyes glistened with tears. I come from Pottersborough, south of the ward. Thank you. She left before I could respond. I woke from a dream of Gwendolyn lying beside me, silent and rotting in death. I didn't think I could go back to sleep after that image. Outside, it was pitch black. I lit a candle and stepped, shivering, onto the thin rug beside my bed. I hastily threw on my wrap and headed downstairs, candle in hand. I retraced my steps to the library. The fastest way to calm down after a nightmare was by reading history. When I crept into the room, the fire was, surprisingly, still lit. My hands were cold, so I moved before the hearth. I craned my neck and looked at Agrippa's portrait. He'd been younger when it was painted, his hair black. What must it have been like to have Agrippa for a father? For a moment, I selfishly wished my own father hadn't been William Howell, a faceless phantom I'd never met. There was the picture of that great estate again, the gleaming white one hidden in a dark valley. I turned to it, entranced by its serene and somehow terrifying beauty. Someone coughed, startling me. Blackwood was seated with a book open on his lap. He appeared as bewildered as I.
What on earth are you doing here?
He stood hastily. He had not been to bed, never taken his jacket off. I wanted something to read. I didn't know where to look. Just seeing him again made my stomach cramp.
Ah. Anything in particular?
Even his voice irritated me. His eyes brushed the length of my body, and then he looked away. I hadn't given it much thought. I pulled my wrap even closer around me.
Might I make a recommendation? This is a basic introduction to the ancients. It's been instrumental in drawing up plans to attack them.
He offered me the book in his hand, The Seven Ancients. Theories and Observations by Mr. Christopher Drummidge. The book was slim, but handsomely bound. I opened to a sketch of Relum, the skinless man. His exposed muscles almost glistened on the page. Whoever had painted this had done an excellent job. The first chapter was titled Origins. Do they know where the ancients came from? I've only read one book on the war. It said the ancients were demons from hell, but I don't know that I believe it. Drummidge makes a case that perhaps they are monsters summoned from the planet's core. He sounded amused. I like his work, but I don't agree with all of his ideas.
Thank you.
I pressed the book to my chest and stood there, silent, while a log crackled in the fireplace. The clock struck 3. I was about to make a hushed exit when he said,
"What did you mean about the headmaster?"
"Pardon?"
"That he was cruel and violent. What did he do?"
God, how could one go about describing Colgrind in any decent way? I flushed, and that was all the answer Blackwood required.
"I see."
His eyes widened. He looked younger, almost sad.
"I'm sorry that happened to you. I wish..."
He turned away so I could not see his face. He straightened his shoulders.
"I'm sorry I didn't do more for you. But it couldn't be helped. That's the one thing you refused to understand at dinner."
That condescending tone had returned. He didn't look at me, though. "It's nice to know it's all down to my lack of understanding."
"You have a right to be upset. But you don't comprehend my situation."
He turned, took my candle, and led me to the other side of the room. Portraits gazed down on us from above. Blackwood gathered the candle flame in his hand, rolled it into a ball, and tossed it to float up, up to a portrait that hung several feet above our heads. The fire held there, and the light revealed the image of a man, young and handsome, and just like Blackwood. No, not just like. There were subtle differences in the face, the eyes crinkled at the corners in some secret merriment, and the full mouth rested in a comfortable smile. "That's my father, Charles Blackwood, 8th Earl of Sorrowfell." His voice was soft, somehow bitter. "He was one of the most tireless workers in the war against the ancients. That's why his picture hangs in this room."
"Of course."
Why was he telling me this?
"My father was a great sorcerer," Blackwood said, running a hand through his hair. "He believed that we, the Blackwood family, had a responsibility to rid England of these monsters."
"Why, your family?"
"We are the most powerful members of our society, Miss Howe."
He paused, as if struggling with what to say.
"We have been the most blessed, and therefore, we must be the most cursed."
He stepped closer. I could feel a need for understanding coiling off him.
"You must realize how seriously I take this war. From the moment my father died, the only duty I had on Earth was to destroy these creatures. I neglected my other obligations, Brimthorn included. I have no time for games, or sports, or love. My whole being belongs to this cause,"
he said.
"Sorcerers should be bent entirely to the task of saving this land, not attending parties and taking carriage rides through the park."
His face twisted in anger. I finally understood his resentment of Magnus.
"How much do you know of the rest of the country's struggles?"
"I know very little,"
I racked my brain. "The ancients have Canterbury."
"They have held Canterbury for 3 years. 3 years! Manchester and Liverpool
are on the verge of collapse as well. Up north, the textile works and the coal mines are attacked on a regular basis to keep us from having fuel and goods. The workers, many of them children, are slaughtered. There was real fury in his voice now. Some sorcerers have gone to aid them, but most of our energy is spent keeping up the ward. We're not fighting. We're hiding. Yes, we must protect the ones most capable of doing something, but only so long as the strong prove themselves worthy of that protection. And I don't believe the powerless should be left entirely to their own devices. One of the greatest legacies my father left was the creation of that colony for the unclean in Brighton. It allows those unfortunate people to live with peace and dignity. I wanted you to understand how deeply I care, he said. And I wanted you to understand why I won't address you or bow to you the way the others do, until you are proved to be a sorcerer, beyond any doubt. I can't address you as such. I need certainty. His eyes seemed to gleam in the firelight. Do you understand? I thought about what I'd seen of Blackwood so far. He rarely smiled or laughed, and he trained by himself every morning before even coming in to breakfast. He assisted in every one of my lessons, unlike Cellini or even Wolf and Lamb. Here he was, reading long into the night. Yes, he took his responsibilities seriously. Everything he had said he meant. I could see it in his eyes. Perhaps we could finally be honest. So, you've no objection to a woman fighting? The prophecy declares that a woman will rise to fight the ancients, and I will give my allegiance to that woman. The way he said it forced me to speak her name. Gwendolyn Agrippa. You believe that she was the prophesied one? Blackwood blinked in surprise. Lady Eliza told me this afternoon. Did you all think you could keep something like that a secret? The Order doesn't want complications, Blackwood said. When they found the Speaker's tapestry, Gwendolyn had just become an incumbent. There was no doubt in anyone's mind that she was chosen, and so all of Agrippa's efforts went into training her. She was fantastic. His eyes softened. Nothing was a challenge. Not for her. Her commendation would have been a triumph the likes none has ever seen. His expression twisted in bitterness. And she died of a fever 3 weeks before the commendation ball. She wasn't the prophesied one, though, I said, checking his reaction. According to Agrippa, he winced as though I'd struck him. Don't you dare say that of her. You made up your mind before you ever laid eyes on me, didn't you? I stepped toward him. I was an impostor. And if Gwendolyn was truly the chosen one, she's dead, and all your hopes died with her. You would choose that certain doom over the possibility that I might be the one. Why? Who are you, exactly? He nearly spit the words. Gwendolyn was from one of our oldest and finest families. Glory was her birthright. I don't hate you for your low birth, he said, as I opened my mouth to give him the greatest hell he'd ever know. But tradition is all that our society stands upon. You are an outsider, and you cannot change that. It was as if a door had slammed shut in my face. I almost dropped the book. It's a wonder you've helped me at all, hating me as you do. I don't hate you. You do hate me, because you hate how I was born. His profile in the firelight was beautiful, marred only by the cold expression he wore. It is amazing how, under any other circumstance, I would have thought him beguilingly handsome. He was beautiful in the way a Roman marble is, hard and inhuman. Your stupidity is terrifying. This is what I believe. He narrowed his eyes. Is that too truthful for you, Miss Howell?
I respect truthfulness. It's always good to know who isn't your friend.
I said I don't hate you.
Then, with a strange air of weariness, he said,
I fear you, perhaps.
Why? He nodded toward the painting of the house I'd admired.
You said you never took trips to Sorrowfell when you were a child.
I've never seen the place.
You have now? That painting is an exact likeness.
Surprised, I turned back to the beautiful image on the wall. Blackwood continued.
You seem drawn to it, which is why the carvings on your stave perplex me.
What's porridge to do with any of this? I said. Blackwood unsheathed his stave. He had not taken even that off, and handed it to me. A twining strand of ivy, identical to mine, was carved on his weapon.
The Blackwood family crest is a pair of clasped hands, with tendrils of ivy binding them together. In the entirety of sorcerer history, only Blackwoods have ever borne the image of ivy.
His brows knitted together.
Until you.
I felt nauseated as I handed his stave back. Does that mean we're bound in some way?
I don't know.
He crossed his arms.
I fear we may be.
Believe me, I said with a shudder. My feelings are exactly the same. The Blackwood house lay ahead, shrouded in mist. The hedge-lined path guided me up toward the front. When I broke through the mist, I found the sky clear and the sun warm. The circle of black forest all around was no more frightening than a make-believe monster in a children's story. This was home, the surest sensation I'd ever had in my life. The great house was even more beautiful than it had been in its picture. With tears of joy, I ran up the steps to be welcomed inside. Someone grabbed my sleeve. Gwendolyn Agrippa pulled me away, shaking her head and shouting. I struggled against her, but it was no use. She was fearfully strong. No, this was where I was supposed to be. This was where I belonged. The church bells tolled. I stood alone in the center of a circle of standing stones. Gwendolyn had vanished. I walked about, inspecting my surroundings. The stones were twice as tall as I was. There were 12 of them, each spaced several feet apart. Odd symbols had been carved into the granite faces, symbols that I had never seen before. A strange noise made me stop and press my ear against one of the rocks. There was a buzzing coming from inside. It was almost music, like the stone was singing. I stood there as the 7 ancients arrived, filling in the gaps of the circle. There was no way out for me now. The church bells tolled. There was Melachorin, a perfect blob of filth and disease. Its leaked, rancid water bristling all over with dark, sharp hairs. Black shapes moved and darted within it, like eels trapped in jelly. How odd to see Nemneris, the water spider, here. She lived in the sea. She was beautiful, with long, delicate legs and a slender green and purple body. Her eyes were 3 shining obsidian orbs. If only she weren't 50 feet long and absurdly venomous. The church bells tolled. Kallax and Zem came next, the ogre and the serpent. Kallax was 20 feet tall with a flat skull, an extended jaw and arms that dragged to the ground. Those arms were very good for smashing through buildings. Zem, with his long lizard body
and fiery gullet, would burn whatever stood in his way. Antes perched on the stone above me and cawed loudly. Flapping her vulture wings, she bared her teeth. She was the size of a horse, and deadlier than a pack of wolves. The church bells tolled. Vlelem, the skinless man, stood across from me. Even though he was the smallest and most human-looking of the ancients, he was terrifying. Perhaps it was because of the intelligence in his gaze. And then, there was Khorasov. The church bells. I woke to a cacophony outside my window. Every church tower in London was ringing out a warning. An attack. I grabbed my wrap and ran out into the hall. Doors down the corridor burst wide. Boys spilling out in different states of undress. Dee staggered half-blind, putting on a top hat while still in his dressing gown. Only Magnus was ready. He threw on his coat as he raced toward me. "They should have listened to you, Howl," he said, nodding at the sleepy, unprepared young men. "If you and Rook thought there'd be an attack, I saw no reason not to be alert. It's probably old Zoffy himself. Won't he love this coat?" Magnus took the steps at a rush, whooping with joy. I was stunned by how quickly everything had happened. "Miss Howl!" Agrippa came up the stairs, his hair sticking wildly in every direction. "Stay in your room. You'll be quite safe." He tried to sweep me down the hallway toward my door. "Is it Khorasov?" I suppressed my fear. After all, this was my destiny. Or at least, I hoped it was. "Let me help." Below us, I watched Blackwood call for the incumbents, organizing them as they arrived.
"Not yet. Stay here. We'll be back soon."
"Where are you going?"
"Trafalgar Square. That's where the Order always meets. Stay here," he said again, and took off after the boys.
There was a flurry of activity, with servants in nightdress rushing about below, lighting the lamps and calling to one another. I didn't see Rook among them. "Rook!" I remembered his black eyes, how that hideous familiar girl had called him the Shadow's Chosen. If Khorasov's riders had such an effect upon him, this ancient might call to him especially and irresistibly. I ran down the stairs and past the servants, who paid me no mind. I fled to the kitchen, calling for Rook, but didn't find him. Lily sped past me in her nightcap. I grabbed her.
"Lily, have you seen Rook?"
"No, miss. What is it?"
"I need to find him."
We ran upstairs to the servants' corridor. He was nowhere to be found. We went back down to my room, just in case he should be there. He wasn't, and I kicked the bed in frustration.
"Where is he?"
Lily looked terrified.
"I need you to help me dress."
I threw open the wardrobe doors.
"Why?"
"I'm going to find him," I said.
"Outside? The master wouldn't like that, miss."
"I know where he might go."
Sighing, Lily pulled out my simplest dress. I wished I had a pair of trousers all my own. Corsets were not designed for battling monsters.
Chapter 10.
People rushed past me as bells tolled and flame and smoke lit the night sky. I clutched porridge and stopped to beg for directions to Trafalgar Square. I found the sorcerers before the National Gallery. There might have been over 100 of them with their staves pointed upward. A great glow appeared in the sky, reflected as a glint of light on the underside of a glass bowl. Apparently, London's ward was a dome of energy. Thunder sounded in the distance, and there, somewhere beneath that rumble, came the horrible scream of a beast. I pushed through the crowd until I stumbled upon Blackwood, his brow knit in concentration.
"What on earth are you doing here?"
he shouted.
"Are there any breaches in the ward?"
"Of course not. Why should there be?"
"It's Howl!"
Arthur Dee pushed through to us.
"He said you'd come."
"Who did?"
"Magnus. He said you'd inspired him."
"What are you talking about?"
I asked.
"What are you doing here?"
Blackwood shouted at me again. Older gentlemen turned to glare at us. Rook might have gone to the creature, I said. He can't get through the ward. But if somebody saw an unclean wandering the streets, who's to say they wouldn't kill him? That frightened me almost as much as Rook actually making it through to Korozov. Blackwood shook his head. I can't worry about that now. Bother this. What were you saying about Magnus? I asked Dee. He went to fight Korozov. Blackwood gripped the poor fellow by his shirt front. What? He snapped. He and Cellini said they were going to the row. They planned to break through and fight. Blackwood threw the enormous boy away and took me by the arm. Those fools, he said, his face twisted in anger. Where's Master Agrippa? We have to go after them. You're not going anywhere. I'm putting you in a carriage. I am coming with you, I said in my best classroom tone. I'm going to find Rook if he's there, and you are going to release me. Blackwood did just that. I'll take you if you can fly, he said. I beg your pardon? He brandished his stave. Touch porridge to the ground at north, south, east, and west. Then raise it high into the air. This will summon the four winds. If you can't do it, I shall send you home. He sounded indulgent, certain I would fail. Blackwood placed his stave in four points and raised his arm. A great torrent of wind swirled about him, and he hovered in the air with a natural ease. I copied him and lifted porridge, willing myself to fly. A cold funnel of wind swirled my skirts and nearly dragged me down the square. Blackwood looked surprised. "Hold it straight!" he cried. The thought of Rook strengthened my arm, focused me. I lifted from the ground, my feet unsteady upon a cushion of wind. "Move your arm down," Blackwood said. He leaned forward onto his stomach, supported by the air. I copied him, feeling as though invisible hands upheld me. "Well done." "Don't sound so shocked." "Please, go home," he said. "Just take me to the ward. I only want to find him if he's there." My bargain worked. Blackwood took my free hand in his, and we moved forward, the sound of wild winds in my ears. I was flying. I'd never felt so light, nor so aware of my physical body. For the first few minutes, I kept waiting to fall. When the wind didn't die or shake me off, I couldn't help but laugh. Blackwood guided me when I had to move the stave left or right or shift to make a turn. We shot over the heads of men and women, two black wraiths on their way to battle. Blackwood's hand was cool in mine, and he tightened his grip the faster we flew. Soon, we pointed our staves toward the heavens again and lowered our feet to the ground. I stumbled, but wasn't hurt. We stood at the edge of the ward. The streets beyond were alive with hundreds of people running. It was a crush of humanity. "I'm going to find the others. Please, for God's sake, stay here," Blackwood said. He nodded. "You did well, Miss Howell." With that unexpected compliment, he put his stave to the ward, sliced downward, and walked through. I touched the place where he'd gone, but it had closed. I pressed my hand against the ward and peered into the crowd beyond, searching for Rook. It was impossible, of course, for him to be on the other side. How could he have gotten through? The idea had only been a panicked imagining, impossible to be real. But then, through the crowd, I caught a glimpse of pale yellow hair. The brightness flashed in the dark mass of humanity and disappeared. "Rook!" I thrust porridge into the ward but met an invisible force. "Do it! Do it!" I snarled, jaw clenched tight. I dragged porridge, looking for any tear. "Open up!" I shouted, teeming with frustration. Porridge sliced into the ward like a knife through a piece of paper. I fell forward and landed on my hands and knees on the other side of the barrier. I checked. The opening was gone. Racing into the crowd, I called, "Rook! Come back!" Screaming faces rose up before me. Elbows struck me in the stomach, feet tripped me. I fought against the current, half insane with desperation. A small body collided with mine, arms wrapped tight around my middle. I pulled the little person away and found myself staring down at Charlie. She wailed and sobbed.
"I can't find them! They're not at home!"
"Who?"
"Mr. Hargrove and the others. Ellie and Billy. They're all gone."
She wept, laying her head on my stomach. I gathered her into my arms and carried her. Rook's fair hair was nowhere to be seen. "We'll find them," I murmured over and over. The crowd thinned as a bright mass of fire spread ahead of me. I heard Blackwood.
"Magnus, you idiot! You'll get yourselves killed!"
My heart raced as I ran to them. As I struggled through the last of the people and into an open street, the beast screamed above me. I gazed up and up into the blackness upon blackness, the shadow and fog. Korosov. A great black funnel cloud, so dark that it stood out against the night sky. The beast towered 50-60 feet, and every time he roared, houses creaked and groaned. When the lightning flashed, I saw a great horned creature's head perched atop the cloud with fiendish, slit-red eyes. Tentacles, like those belonging to some undersea monstrosity, waved wildly from the center. One crashed into a window and sent half a brick wall tumbling down. Those tentacles had given Rook his scars. Rook. I still didn't see him, and I was glad of that. I set Charlie down and turned her toward the fleeing crowd.
"Go with them."
"But where'd they go?"
She sobbed as I pushed her, begged her to run and hide. When she finally did as I asked, I strode toward the others. My palms were so sweaty I nearly dropped porridge. Their figures were dark blurs, brightened with the occasional burst of fire. I caught sight of Cellini as he went into a deep crouch and rapidly spun his stave in a circle over his head. He sent a cyclone roaring toward the beast, powerful enough to knock Korosov backward. Blackwood stood, weaving a net of fire as quickly as possible, his face illuminated in the flame's glow. Korosov roared and twisted, filling the air with debris and dust. I ran to Blackwood and leveled my stave alongside his.
"What are you doing here?"
he screamed, so furious that a vein stuck out in the middle of his forehead.
"How do I help?"
I pretended not to hear him. He looked ready to throw me to the ancient, but I said,
"This will go better with another person."
With an angry sigh, Blackwood showed me how to dip porridge into the growing cloud, how to move my wrist to make the fire grow. I was slow and awkward, but not totally inept. On his command, we willed it up and out. My aim wasn't as good as Blackwood's, but it worked. Korosov wailed as our attack struck home, covering the mountain of shadow and fog with light. Overhead, a figure flitted back and forth through the air, shooting bursts of flame. With a scream, the ancient launched a tentacle in the figure's direction, but received a blast across the mouth for his trouble. While Korosov bellowed in pain, Magnus dropped out of the sky, landing gracefully beside us.
"Give us a light then, Hal," he said.
I built up flame in the palm of my hand. He swirled the fire into the air, waved in thanks, and raced toward the creature. Hovering at eye level with the beast for an instant, Magnus brought his arms down in a mighty swing and delivered another shot across the monster's face. Korosov, blinded, lashed out with all of his tentacles. Magnus floated back fast and landed beside us with a victorious cry. With his windswept hair and his coat flapping free, he looked like a hero from a storybook.
"I'm ready to see the Lady Sorcerer in action! What do you say?" he called.
"Yes," I yelled back. Magnus's laughter was joyous. It didn't take me long to realize that, for him, battle was a gift. Cellini ran to join us, talking excitedly at Magnus. When he saw me, he frowned.
"She shouldn't be here," he said.
"My thoughts exactly," Blackwood snapped. "But right now, we can use the help."
"Trust me, you'll need it," I shouted.
Cellini took his place near me, but leaned in and said,
"You shouldn't be here,"
as if he weren't also here against Agrippa's orders. We formed a diamond with me in front, Blackwood behind, Cellini and Magnus to the left and right. After all my difficulties in the obsidian room, I prayed I didn't falter. My legs trembled. There was no running now. I gave us a small light, and we began. Cellini prayed in Latin as we wove another net of fire.
"Pater Noster, qui es in celis, sanctificator nomen tuum," he called,
and kissed a crucifix that hung about his neck.
"Italian sorcerers," Magnus muttered as the net swelled. "They take war so seriously."
Korozov roared and unleashed a tentacle, the fat black thing striking the ground 10 feet from where we stood. A voice inside me was screaming, but I couldn't be afraid. Fear equaled death. It was time to respond.
"Get ready," Blackwood yelled.
We reached back and, as a unit, threw the fire toward the creature. It blanketed the shadow beast, slowing him down, giving us time for another attack.
"Let's do it again," I cried.
Then I saw him. He appeared before Korozov, out of thin air and darkness. Rook stretched a hand out toward me. His shirt was torn down the front, putting his pulsing scars on display. I could tell that his eyes were black, even from this distance.
"Rook!"
I broke the pattern and ran for him. Blackwood seized me by the waist.
"Let me go!"
Rook raised his arms and issued that high, unearthly scream. The fog swallowed him whole.
"No!"
I beat at Blackwood. Porridge tumbled to the ground.
"It's not real! He wasn't there!"
Blackwood shouted in my ear as Magnus grabbed my stave.
"He tries to lure you in. It's an illusion."
An illusion. Not real. Rook wasn't there. And then I heard her voice. Her little voice as she raced toward the blackness, screaming,
"Ellie! Billy! There you are!"
Charlie ran to Korozov, ran for the little brother and sister who she thought had appeared. Magnus and Cellini shouted for her to get back, but she was too far away. The child tried to put her arms around the two phantoms, mystified when they vanished. She looked up as the roaring blackness overwhelmed her and disappeared beneath the folds of smoke and fog. Her high, thin scream sounded for an instant, then faded away. When the shadow moved back, Charlie was gone. Magnus attempted to assemble us into the diamond pattern, but I couldn't join him. Fire heated me, and anger fed the flames. Head pounding, I wrenched away from Blackwood and rushed toward the towering black cloud. The creature's roar reverberated through my bones as I lifted my arms to welcome him. I was shaking. "Come for me, you bastard," I thought. "If you enjoyed the taste of that little girl, just see what I'll do for you."
"Come on,"
I said through my teeth. The tentacle appeared above me, poised to strike.
"Howl!"
Magnus shouted. Every inch of my body, from the roots of my hair to the bottoms of my feet, hummed with energy. I let the power have its way. The world exploded in flame, the heat glowing blue and then scarlet. I looked up and up as my column of fire rose 20, 30, 40 feet. A shattering, beastly cry erupted in the air above. I smelled sulfur. Something struck me hard and sent my body rolling along the ground. A million stars exploded in my vision. I felt horribly cold and fell into blackness. I woke in bed, a damp cloth on my cheek. Fenswick stood beside my pillow, his mouth pursed in a sour expression as he twitched his ears.
"So you're awake at last."
He didn't sound pleased. When I sat up, the room swirled before me. I sank back down onto the pillow. A candle burned on a table beside my bed, and I focused on the orange flame. I was alive, somehow. Was I whole? My arms and legs worked, and I studied my hands, forearms, chest, but found no scars.
"You're not marked," Fenswick said as he pulled on a silk bell cord. "He struck you with the wrong side of his tentacle. Or the right side, from your perspective."
"How did I get here?"
"Magnus carried you back through the ward."
My face warmed a bit. "What happened to Korozov?" The door opened, and Agrippa entered, followed by all the incumbents. Magnus and Cellini perched at the foot of my bed. Dee, Wolf, and Lamb remained nearer the door. Blackwood stood with his back to the wall, apart from all of us, as usual. Fenswick took my face in his paw and snapped his fingers before my eyes.
"She's fine. I've no earthly idea how," the little creature grumbled.
Agrippa clasped the bedpost and came to my side.
"You have violated every directive the Order could ever give."
He grabbed my hand and kissed it.
"And you are everything I hoped you'd be."
His eyes shone with tears.
"Everything."
"What happened to Korozov?"
"He retreated." Magnus knelt beside Agrippa. "You sent him packing. Should have heard the old boy roar and scream. He disappeared in the air, vanished, like the shadow and bloody fog he is. He's never run like that before."
The boys came closer, all except Blackwood. He didn't even smile. He was probably just angry because I'd disobeyed him and gone through the ward for...
"Rook!"
My throat was dry. Wolf poured water from my china pitcher and handed me a glass.
"Is Rook all right?" "He never left," Magnus said. "They found him outside, in one of the horse's stalls. He tied himself to a post."
"What?"
"He said he'd felt the urge to run to the damn beast, so he went down to the stables. Said he knew we'd keep you safe. But he didn't want to go and get himself killed and have you worry. We found him a few hours ago. Looked as if he had a rough night, poor devil. He was soaked in sweat."
Rook had been secure the entire time. I collapsed onto the pillow again and closed my eyes. The relief was sweet. But then, with a pang, I remembered Charlie.
"If Korozov comes back..."
"You will not fight him again until you're commended," Agrippa said sternly. "You were brilliant, but you were also lucky. The Order was only just able to forgive what happened. That goes for the rest of you," he said specifically to Magnus. "From now on, you do as you're told, or face being excommunicated."
The boys grumbled their agreement. Magnus pointed his stave toward the ceiling.
"To Henrietta Howell!"
The boys cheered, all except Blackwood. Fenswick spooned some powder into my glass of water. Drinking it down, I discovered I couldn't keep my eyes open. Everyone's faces blurred.
Sighing, I relaxed into my pillow and watched the candle flame burning beside me. It grew smaller and flickered feebly. In my drugged state, I imagined that the darkness itself cupped a hand around the light. I giggled at the absurdity of that idea and slept. Rook brushed a strand of hair from my face. "Nettie," he whispered. He was robed in blackness. It hung from his shoulders and moved along his skin like folds of drapery.
"You were safe,"
I sighed, reaching up to touch him. He grabbed my fingers, kissed them. The ease with which he did it thrilled me. "Better than that. I'm free now. Can you see it?" The shadows buoyed me up, and I floated on a dark, depthless sea. Rook hung suspended above me, his solid black eyes gleaming. We were two small objects spinning in a void. Exhausted, I fell back onto my bed. "Rest now," Rook whispered. "But come to me tomorrow. You will come, won't you?"
"Of course,"
I said, rolling over and gazing at the last dying spark of the candle. The rich, velvet darkness extinguished it, and the dream vanished with the light. Hargrove sat on the edge of my vanity table, still wearing that ridiculous red and purple and orange coat.
"So," he said, "you're a little fireball. I should have known."
He took a bite out of the crisp red apple he held in his hand.
"You really should come and see me. It's about to get much harder for you."
He picked up a glass bottle of scent, sprayed some, and made a face.
"Go away and let me sleep,"
I grumbled, sitting up in bed. My room filled with that dream mist again. Everything appeared cloudy, except the magician. He slid down and stood by my bedpost, eating the apple to the core.
"Stupid thing. You can't even imagine what you're in for. Come to me tomorrow, and I'll help you. It'll be your reward for trying to save little Charlie."
His smug expression vanished. He sighed.
"Yes, it was my own fault. I never remember to count heads."
"Leave me alone."
"You must come. The information I have is delicate. You'll want it."
"Go away and let me sleep, Jenkins Hargrove," I grumbled, fluffing my pillow.
"All right. Here."
He threw the apple core at me, and I leaned up to catch it. An instant later, I woke. The room was empty, both of mist and of magicians. I sat up with a groan. I didn't scream when I discovered the apple core in my hand, but I certainly wanted to. Chapter 11.
"I shouldn't be here," I thought as I returned to Jenkins Hargrove's home the next day.
Part of me wanted to turn around, to ignore the magician's visitation the night before. But this was twice now he had come to me in a dream. Twice he had spoken to me. And that trick with the apple, how had he done it? He'd said he had delicate information. Fine. I would listen, and then I would tell him never to come to me again. I had been given the morning off to rest, and it had taken a great deal of work to be allowed outside to walk about the neighborhood, to take in the air. They would miss me before too long. I knew I must hurry. Rounding the corner, I looked about for the poor unclean man. I'd brought a coin and a piece of bread to give to him, but he was no longer at the wall. Perhaps he'd moved on. Perhaps something had happened. What a horrible thought. I prayed someone had taken pity on him.
Steeling myself, I swept up the wooden stairs and knocked at the magician's door. A chorus of small voices told me to enter.